Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Eddie Packham, and we are in your ears, in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. Well, North London is ours as we followed up our victory at the Emirates with a better one at the Tottenham Stadium. The late Leandro Trossard winner meant that we are now unbeaten in our forays into the capital this season, seeing us picking up 15 points in 7 games. However, our trips to Manchester have not been so successful, and on Wednesday, we continued our pointless run at the Etihad as Man City's 3-0 victory saw them return to the top of the table. On Sunday, Southampton visit the Amex, where we've only picked up 16 points all season, but a victory would see us surpass our Premier League record points tally. Joining me today as we cast an eye over all of that is, of course, Alan Wears, and we are delighted to welcome back, fresh from his journey into Manchester, the Argus's chief sports writer, Brian Owen. Welcome back to Sussex, Brian. It's been an arduous journey, I believe.
No, well, the journey was okay, but it's just, you know, going up there. As journeys back from Manchester go, it was very good. And then we went straight into a press conference with Graham Potter in the afternoon. So they came back, the team, we're talking Thursday now. They came back during the day, and then they did a bit of training, and then we met up with Graham Potter sort of late afternoon. So yeah, it's been started off in Piccadilly Gardens, I think it's called, in Manchester, and ended up in Lancing.
That sounds very salubrious place, from Piccadilly Gardens to Lancing.
Have I got that right? It's not as, doesn't look as nice as it sounds, but it's functional. You know, it's another one chalked off.
It sounds like something from a Paddington movie, to be honest. Yeah. It's been a decent week for us, really. I mean, no one really expected us to get anything out of Man City, to be honest, did they, Brian?
I think some expectation was starting to creep in after what had happened at Arsenal and Tottenham, but no, yeah. And at half time as well, even at half time, there was. Funny enough, it's a weird atmosphere at the Etihad. It's subdued. They don't really get. It's not exactly fever pitch. And the reporters behind me were saying, you know, Brighton scored first here, this could turn really ugly. But they didn't really threaten, and they didn't have the possession that they had in those other games, and that was the big difference. And then City sort of turned it on a little bit in the second half, had a couple of deflections, and probably as expected in the end. But I think there was a little bit of expectation. I think people allowed themselves to dream, which is fair enough.
Oh, we got to. I mean, we'd never won at the Tottenham Stadium either. So, I mean, obviously, we got that monkey off our backs last Saturday. So let's start there then. And there was one change to the side with Lamptey coming in for Danny Welbeck, which suggests a change of shape there. But I mean, there's been an awful lot of talk.
Did it?
Yeah,
really?
I know. I know. Who knew? But I mean, obviously, we've a lot of water's gone under the bridge since this game now. But I mean, I've just been watching it back again today, and we were just magnificent in that game.
And I think as well that was a step up in test to the Arsenal. Going to Arsenal, I think I saw you twice, didn't I, just before the game?
Yeah,
and they
were
a little bit. They just lost to Palace, and they were a little bit subdued. I thought it was a really, I don't know if you were at Tottenham, the two of you, the atmosphere was really vibrant, and I think they were going really well, and I think they expected to see off Brighton, and I could see Brighton get something at Arsenal, definitely, and I was probably less confident about that as Spurs. And then you got Gary Mabbott reminding us on the pitch over the PA that Spurs have been destroying teams of late, and I think they felt like a side on the up, and that felt like a really good test.
I mean, I should point out, Brian, that we also had Alan Mullery on the pitch saying that Spurs fans should be thanking us for beating Arsenal.
I didn't hear that bit.
I
wasn't out early enough.
While you were taking in the atmosphere, especially with what happened, did you feel that there was an air of overconfidence about it? I mean, or do you think that maybe even that might have seeped through to the players?
I don't know. I mean, I think Brighton were very confident in what they were doing, and they obviously had a certain test, and they had players playing in positions they'd hardly ever played. When Gary Mabbott said that, I thought that's a little bit more than you would normally expect. And I did tweet it, which I don't normally tweet things like that, because probably a little bit of mischievously tweeting it. But you know, they had scored a couple of fives, and they had scored a lot of goals, and we'd seen what they do on counter-attacks and, you know, attacking from deep. So I think they had every right to be pretty confident. Why not? You know, it's just, you're flying high, you're going for Champions League, it's a sunny day, you're at home to Brighton, why not enjoy it?
Yeah. So, Brighton, I mean, out of the team, I mean, there wasn't anything short of an 8 out of 10 from any of the players, but how much of the victory would you put down to the job that Yves Bissouma was doing, and particularly on Harry Kane?
Yeah, loads. And from early on, you could see it was his... It was going to be one of his good days. He was so effective. I think he seems, I suppose, if he sees things, because he sees things early, but he seems to move very quickly in terms of he's always there just in time to get a foot in. And also think he's got a little sort of that sort of body feint and that nice touch, which helps him keep possession. So he doesn't just win it. He then uses it. But it was a whole plan, wasn't it? There was a plan in place, possibly based on the way Spurs sat back and attacked Brighton, sort of did destroy them actually in times on counter-attacks in the FA Cup. And this time, Brighton slowed them down, blocked those sort of passing options. The game was nice and long. There wasn't that space in between. And they were good on the ball, which actually they weren't last night.
I mean, we restricted Spurs to just, well, five shots on target. Well, they had no shots on target, four shots on goal, but none on target during the game. 51% possession compared to our 12 shots and five on target. So I mean, it's no fluke. This. I mean, we just, like you said, we closed down their passing lanes. We dominated the possession.
You watched the day, didn't you?
Oh well, I mean, actually, okay. I was going to mention this later. How wonderful was it to have Chris Hughton on Match of the Day? Because usually on these sort of things, it's not a case of how Brighton won, it's how Spurs lost or how Man City won or if we'd beat Man City. There is a massive...
Well, can I just say, AD, I think that you have to bear in mind that Chris Hughton himself has been on the receiving end of that. You know, in his two seasons as the Premier League manager with the Albion, you know, we beat Manchester United. I think we probably beat Arsenal under him as well. Yeah. You know, we've got results against those top sides. Or even if we played, you know, didn't get the result and played well, you know, it's down to the fact that, you know, Chelsea weren't at their game or Spurs weren't at their game. So Hughton himself has been on the receiving end of that. And you could also then argue about the sort of any sort of sour grapes that it might have been about the nature of his leaving the club. But Hughton isn't that kind of person. All right, he might have been cheesed off at the time. But, you know, he's a grown man, he's an intelligent man. He knows this sort of nonsense goes on in football. And there he is, he's taken Ghana to the World Cup. And it's, you know, you see, you know, the articulate, intelligent, kind, brilliant person that he was when he was with us. And prepared to actually stick up for the underdog. I mean, you know, it's not the first time we've beaten Spurs, but I know the expectation is for Spurs to beat Brighton, especially at that ground. But, you know, Hughton knows where it's at. He knows what it's about. And he's also exactly right as well.
Yeah.
I think if my research is right, Spurs are the only team Brighton have beaten three seasons in a row in the Premier League.
Brilliant.
Top status.
Pretty sure that's right. You know, not three games in a row, but three different seasons consecutively.
I think it's just Chelsea's scalp we've got to get now out of those top six, isn't it? It's the only one.
Yeah, should have had it.
Yeah, and our performances against them. Like I always felt, the first one I always felt we were going to get was going to be Liverpool's. I think it was Man United's in the end. But the first one I always felt was going to be Liverpool's, because even though they stuck five past us, I think it was first time round, the performances against them in the second season were getting better. Mm. And eventually we have had a couple of decent results. You know, we've beaten them up there. And I feel that with Chelsea, like I say, this season, I think it was two draws, but, you know, and in both cases, well, certainly for nearly 90 minutes of the game here and certainly for 60 minutes up at the Bridge, you know, we were the better side and we're back to the old, you know, but for finishing. Mm. So it's, you know, these results are coming.
Yeah. Well, Welbeck hit the inside of the post, didn't he, at Stamford Bridge last season, behind closed doors, what, about 5 minutes from the end. Mm. But the first major one was Arsenal, and they were on a bit of a slump at the time, and that was the Dunk and Glenn Murray goals.
Yeah.
And that was the first major scalp, and that was a classic example of it being all about Arsenal's crisis and what Arsenal did wrong and how badly Arsenal defended, et cetera, et cetera. So that was the breakthrough one.
Easy, yeah. Brian. You're talking about us winning games at home. Come on. No, but the thing is, I remember those.
The point we're making here, and it is an interesting exercise to compare and contrast the way that we set up and the manner of our victories, both against Arsenal and Spurs. Yeah, we nullified for the most part, certainly in the first half at Arsenal, we nullified their threat to the point of them giving the ball away. And with Spurs, they had a go at it, but yes, we made them play to our game plan. And it's interesting that neither of them could actually break out of that. And I think that's the difference between Arsenal and Spurs on one hand and Man City on the other. Because as much as we could have actually tried to have nullified Man City, you know full well they've got another, probably half a dozen gears to go through.
Yeah, for sure. But
Spurs and Arsenal really didn't.
Yeah. But I mean, Brian, there was a lot of talk after the Spurs game of particularly from the Spurs side, and this really galls me because we've seen them do this all the time, and the referee, the Mr. H. Kane from Essex, he's usually the chief culprit of this. But were we a bit more streetwise?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think Spurs got away with they got away with stuff. I know there was complaints about Mwepu from the home crowd, but certainly there was a couple of fouls which should have been yellow cards. I thought for Spurs, there was the elbow, obviously, which was
given as yellow. That should have been a red.
But I also thought there was Højbjerg, who was involved in pretty much everything. He could have got booked for a foul on McAllister, similar foul for which Mwepu was then booked. Yeah. And was it Reguilon who grabbed Mwepu as well? So I don't know if Brighton were they streetwise. I don't think they were very. I wouldn't say Mwepu was streetwise when he left that foot in on a yellow card a minute from half time. I wouldn't call that streetwise. Not sure when this is going out, this podcast. Are we going out after Saturday morning?
Yes, go on.
In which case, I can tell you that he thought he was lucky not to be sent off.
Right.
That's in today's Argus. He thought he was unlucky to be yellow carded, and once he'd been yellow carded, he thought he was lucky not to get a second yellow for that foul.
Well, therein lies an interesting point. If he's got that level of self-awareness, I did love Potter's kind of form of diplomacy after the game. We were talking about where everyone, I think we had a WhatsApp group, I think it was a Twitter question went out, should Mwepo be substituted at half-time? And it wasn't even just a case of it being forced into Potter's hands. You just knew that Spurs had sort of targeted him, and all he had to do was just fart in the wrong direction, and that was it. He was going to get his second yellow. So I think it was something that had to happen. But like I said, with Potter's diplomacy afterwards, well, they said it was mostly tactical. Sorry, nice try, Graham, but
He did amend that slightly on the press conference on Monday, where it was more like he said sort of Tottenham, they knew what they were doing, and he more or less. So straight after the game, though, in the press conference, it was partly tactical, partly. But he went a little bit further on Monday when he spoke to the local press ahead of the Man City game.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, like I say, I mean, it's a couple of things I've seen with Mwepu when he's played before he got injured. I'm thinking, not quite bull in a china shop, but I think he does have to practice a little bit more due care and attention. Because, the one where he trod on the whoever it was at ankle, when you say the one he got away with. I think the only reason I can think of that he didn't get that second yellow is because Paulson didn't red card the Spurs fella for his elbow. It might have actually just occurred to him 5 minutes later, saying, well, why didn't I red card him? Everything should have pointed to a red card. And he gave him the benefit of the doubt, I think, because he missed Kukurea's face. But it's a red card because of the intent.
Yeah, and there was clear intent, whether it connects or not. I mean, that's the thing.
You could almost hear his brain clicking as he stopped, didn't he? Kulusevski, he was moving, then he stopped. You could always hear his brain whirring, right?
Yeah.
Going to elbow this bloke. So, and that's where VAR, you think, must have a role to play more so than I didn't really see where Pawson was.
But I mean, we've seen a couple of instances, Brian, with other games, not involving us, where we've seen players be honest and stay on their feet when they've been clearly fouled. And VAR aren't looking at it because they're not seeing the fact that they're basically seeing the foul, but they're not saying it's a penalty because they hasn't gone over. It's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, if you're being fouled, you're being fouled. It's just encouraging people to see, isn't it?
But that's not just VAR. That's poor refereeing as well. I mean, and I know what you're saying is that one assumes that, and again, we're back to the whole notion that we've spoken about many times, is that it seems to have to be a greater degree of foul in the penalty area than it is anywhere else in the pitch in order for it to be awarded. Hence, players do go down, and they go down somewhat ridiculously. Saka got a yellow card for it just outside the box at Arsenal, and quite rightly so.
Well, the Conga was the bigger culprit.
But my point would be is that because, I mean, if Cucurella had gone down, he'd have got slings and arrows coming his way, because irrespective of the whole fact of the intent of the flying elbow, he didn't touch him. You know, although the Match of the Day commentator could have actually sort of phrased it a bit better. He said Cucurella didn't really cover himself in glory. You think, hang on, he didn't do anything there. You know, someone was trying to take his head off. The law is quite clear, and it's about the intent, and the intent was clearly there.
But I think what all this underlines as well is the frustration on the pitch and off the pitch that Spurs were feeling by that time.
Due to the way
the game's going.
Well, in this instance, like you said earlier, Brian, neither of us were at that particular game. We were at the Arsenal game with you, but we weren't at the Spurs game. Yeah. But certainly where you're talking about the atmosphere, it's all hepped up and very, very lively. It certainly came across on the television. But also you can hear, you know, the frustration. The point, you're also almost thinking that they're booing Brighton for being such spoilers. You know, hang on, we're Spurs. We're putting four or five past everyone. Who are you to do this to us? And this is, I mean, who was it was saying this? It was after the game. It was a tactical game. It wasn't one of, you know, probably for a neutral, it was probably quite a boring game.
Yeah.
Conte after the game was very complimentary, actually.
Well, he was for a bit, and then actually didn't he then start moaning about our behaviour, Brian?
I didn't go into his press conference actually, because for the first time we had player availability, so I went straight to the plate where the players.
Oh, came. Right.
But I think in terms of the Spurs fans voicing their dissatisfaction before moaning at Brighton players, the first thing that you heard was moaning at their own players for not getting the ball forward and not being too tentative and a bit like Arsenal did. And that was obviously a result of the lack of options they were being permitted by the Brighton setup.
Okay, Brian, well, one of the major pluses of the two games in North London was the appearance of Moise Caicedo. Now you obviously have contacts in the Spanish speaking press and in Ecuador and stuff. So what have you been in contact with them? Have they been feeling the plaudits?
Yeah, well, from what I've seen, they've sort of wondering why he hasn't been playing it in the first place, but. I mean, I don't know if you saw a piece. There's a bloke called Ronald, who's Ecuadorian, but he's in London now. He's here studying and working, and he does all these videos. He's got some brilliant YouTube videos, probably showing footage he shouldn't. Well, I don't think his camera's good enough actually to actually get the action. But and he's comes draped in his flag and trying to get hold of the Ecuador players and cheering them on. And I've been talking to him, and he's absolutely. He says he's just so proud of what's going on. And when he saw, you know, the cutback he did for the goal from Wepu, the assist, he said, I'll remember this moment for the rest of my life or something. And I think brilliant. I think Caicedo's got that, is that he does carry him and sort of two or three others do carry the hopes of a nation. Yeah. And it's a nation which is at one of its highest points ever. It's not like, you know, the main player of, I suppose England are on quite a high point as well, aren't they, at the moment? But it's not like your run-of-the-mill national team. It's a team having the time of their lives, and he's the symbol of it. So he's got all that, and he's that sort of maturity and that experience, which Potter has referred to as well. And it makes you wonder, in a way, why he wasn't brought in earlier. But then it maybe they've done it spot on because of the way he's played.
Well, Graham himself admitted that he wondered why he hadn't done it earlier after his last few performances. And
I think slightly tongue-in-cheek, slightly lightheartedly. But you know, he has waited. It has paid off with Lamptey, with McAllister. It has happened with other players. And he's also explained, you know, they were going well and then they were really struggling. So both were reasons not to put him in. And Yacomoda, of course, Brighton have lost. So he would have been ahead of him in the pecking order. 2, and then you get to a game where you just want loads of midfielders. So in you go.
But I mean, obviously, I mean, fast forwarding to Sunday, obviously, we're going to be without Eves again, second game of his suspension. So he will probably get his home debut, I'd imagine.
You would have thought so, yes. I didn't have any more questions of time left, but I was thinking of asking Potty, you know, how will he react and what would he sort of think of that? But it'll be, I think he'll just, I don't think it'll be any big deal. Well, it'll be a special day for him, of course, when you see some of the things he put on Instagram as well. It all means an awful lot to him, but I don't think it'll be anything that he can't handle. I'm sure he'll,
It's one of those points about sort of, you know, a player, especially one who hasn't played too much, or if they have, they've only played at under 23 level, and the level of expectation that comes either from without, and we've had it historically or recently historically with Percy Tau, but a player who comes from without that we haven't really seen, and yet because someone else has been playing poorly, therefore this particular player must be the next answer. It's actually kind of more of a fortunate happenstance rather than an obvious thing that was going to happen, that Caicedo actually looks at home, you know, in the first team in the Premier League. I mean, what are Potter, do you know, has Potter really sort of said what his hopes for him are, or is he just going to sort of like steer him on as sort of carefully and gradually as he can?
I guess so. I mean, he thinks he'll be an absolutely top player. He thinks he's got high hopes for him. Perhaps that's why he's been a little bit careful with him. I was probably a bit surprised he went to Belgium on loan, but obviously they've brought him back and had that taste of it at Tottenham. And then you thought, are we going to see more after he did well at Tottenham in the FA Cup? But three games to come into in a way.
A hell of a baptism.
Off to a degree, I suppose. And he had a lot of support there, but he was just as good. We'll come on to it, I know. But he did so much good work as well at Man City, including a very timely challenge on Mahrez.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll come to the back in a minute. I just want to move on quickly. I just want to talk about, I mean, we were talking about Enoch Mwepu earlier, and obviously about the fact that he was targeted. But I mean, in the first half when he was on the pitch, he was a massive threat, and he was. I mean, the thing that we always loved, we spoke about this last week and several times, and particularly when we were talking to him himself as well, that his first thought is always to go forward and can he shoot? And I can't remember the last midfielder that we had that has got so many shots away, dangerous shots away. We've had Eve Basuma, who normally bothers the air traffic control when he shoots. But
sorry, AD, I have to cut across you there. You may remember it was actually not that long ago that Mwepu missed two absolute stinking sitters where he was 2 yards out and he still managed to balloon it. So be careful what you wish for. I mean, don't get me wrong. We know he can shoot, but that doesn't mean to say he hasn't got the Brighton disease as well.
Well, he's not as bad as a certain other player.
Oh, stop it.
But
no, at least at Spurs, absolutely. I mean, even with one sort of, twist of the body, he managed to sort of get that shot on target. And then he had another one where, you know, the Spurs fans are screaming for him to be sent off anyway. I think even just the sight of him was having them screaming. But yeah, he managed to get 2 shots away, which, you know, in the same match when McAllister had an opportunity of his own and took a typical Brighton shot. And some people seem to learning and some aren't.
But I mean, you know, I've said this before. I mean, I'm never going to have a go at a player for like trying to score a goal for their team. You know, if you want to win the lottery, you got to buy a ticket, right? So, McAllister is, again, he's always trying to like get a shot away. Mwepu's always trying to get a shot away. And you know, we haven't had a plethora of midfielders like that. And I'm struggling to think of the last one, to be honest. Craig Conway?
No, but my point would ever be is that, you know, these are supposed to be Premier League players, you know, and I'm thinking of the great move that we had that left McAllister just outside the box with a certain amount of space and he still managed to balloon his shot. I mean, I'd appreciate he's trying to get it over the defender, away from the defender. He's trying to get it away from the goalkeeper, but it was still a poor shot. And I'm afraid to say still typical of far too much that's going on. Now, the fact is we've had a couple of really good results against Spurs and against Arsenal, and we had some more shots on target, which was great. But, you know, we have it within us to, if we felt like it, beat nearly everyone and beat everyone quite comfortably, but for the fact of our appalling shooting. Yeah, we have off days. We have stinkers. We were awful. When you look back on it, we were awful at home against Everton earlier in the season.
Mm.
But not every defeat were we awful. But you still have to have that notion. It's great when we get forward, but just rewind 4 games ago, Norwich City, we're screaming our heads off about it. And yeah, have they learned from playing 3 top sides? Have they learned? One would like to think so. I would be appalled if we got back to effectively playing, having played Norwich, that we played like Norwich. We're playing Southampton, we played like Southampton. When having played Spurs and Arsenal, we played like them. It's one of those infuriating things that you have about the Albion. Not that they're a bad side or a good side or anything like that, because you don't become poor in short space of time. It's the nature of consistency that has still yet to come. It will come, but it's still yet to come.
Sorry, I was just going to say, they spent a lot of time chasing games as well, which wasn't the case at Arsenal and Tottenham. And I don't know if that increases anxiety when you get a chance or you're trying a shot. So, you know, if you're down and you really, really need that goal, because they've been 1-0 down in most games until those 2 North London.
Well, one person that didn't have any anxiety in the final third was Leandro Trossard, who once again, another late show to get us the winner. In the 90th minute there, and it was a hell of a finish, wasn't it, Brian?
Yeah, fantastic. It was some good work by obviously Lallana and Welbeck, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But he just, that one swivel of the hips or whatever it was, and he sent players going the wrong way. And I think what Graham Potter saw as the irony is that he scored these 2 goals now playing out wide, and they've been trying to get him into central positions and get more goals. And he suddenly scored 2. He was very much wing back the Tottenham game. Arsenal, he was further forward.
Yeah.
He was more like a winger, but he was still the old chalk on the boot sort of thing. Mm. And he ends up getting those, you know, I suppose maybe harder to pick up, but he got into a great position at Arsenal. And that was a very confident finish as well, because he had sort of time to think about it. And then, Tottenham, fantastic bit of play. And I've done a piece about him as well, you know, about that wing back, because there's also other parts of that job, and he didn't just score a couple of goals, he threw himself in the way of a shot as well in the goal. So hopefully he'll be back tomorrow, but what a moment of magic. That's what he can do.
As soon as I saw it and I saw the replay, shall I tell you who that finish reminded me of? That was
Archie Gemmell.
Glenn Murray finish.
I thought you could say Archie Gemmell in the
World Cup.
The finish was out. I'm not so sure about the swivel and turn. Glenn would have been on his way to the floor by that point.
I couldn't think of anybody less like than that, because it was low centre of gravity, wasn't it? It was
it's the outside of the foot stroking it past the keeper, because he wasn't actually going to.
That was past it in. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah,
and we had a brilliant view from where we were in the press box, right behind it. You could see that angle, and I'm guessing a lot of the away fans in the corner had the same angle, but from the other side. So all the better. You just saw it. You knew it was going in. It was rolling into what was quite a big space between Lloris and his far post.
So AD,
yes,
that you've come up with. I mean, it's a bit like the yellow shirt, isn't it? It's an anomaly, but we've done really well in London, haven't we?
We've got as many points in London as we have at home this season. So,
good grief. And I think that every single one where we've got a result, we've scored it in 90 or 89 minutes and later. And the only one where we haven't scored in 89 minutes, they did. In other words, Arsenal, they scored. Arsenal scored in 89 minutes. But apart from that, so Chelsea was last minute. Palace was. West Ham was. Brentford was nearly last minute. Spurs was. Yeah. And then Arsenal actually were the ones. Maybe if we can continue this next year, because don't forget, we've now got Fulham joining us.
Yeah, well, we'll come on to that a little bit later on. But first, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. As ever, we are brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, and Phil has provided us with another beautiful jersey. And this one, I think, is beautiful. I love it. Now,
weirdo,
if you can Who wants to have a go at describing this one for me?
I can't actually see it at the moment, but from memory, it's red. It's got a very French style to it. Possibly stripes across the shoulders.
Yeah, it's basically a classic Adidas three stripes.
Trefoil,
Crocodile badge. Basically, it's plain red, white collars, white cuff. You'd say under any other circumstances, and I'll tell you what that is in a minute, apart from the badge, you'd say it was Nottingham Forest. But, and I think this is where the laws on sponsorship apply overseas differently to they do here, because there is a given size, the maximum size you can have with a main chest sponsor. There is this white patch with this, what looks like, I suppose it's sort of black electrical tape to make up the word kindy or kindy. I've no idea who kindy or kindy are or were. And I think that the badge has been photoshopped as well, hasn't it, AD?
Is it the crocodile badge? Because I can't see anymore.
It does look kind of reptilian. I mean, yes. I think you said before we came on air, Brian, that you had an idea as to who this might be. So
I think it's Neem.
Oh, Brian.
In France.
You're on fire. You're on fire.
Well, I used to go and watch a lot of French football, and I did actually go to the last game at their old stadium, which was a division two title playoff between the South winners and the North winners being Le Havre. And it was a way of getting free transport back up from the South of France on holiday. So I went back on the minibus, went to watch the 0-0 draw in the second leg, which gave Le Havre a 3-0 aggregate win. And then 10 a.m. the next morning, we left in a minibus, didn't take any toll roads, and got back at 6 a.m. on Sunday. 20-hour, the longest away trip of my life, but it was free. And it got me over a French rail strike, which would have left me stranded down in...
when you say we, who was we?
Le Havre supporters, who I knew. Oh. I used to go and watch Le Havre, so I knew they were going down there. I was down that way for a week in, like, Barcelona. And then I got although there were no French trains, the international trains running across France were running, so I got a train from Barcelona to Nîmes. Arrived in Nîmes about 4 a.m. with a load of Portuguese fruit pickers, because it was the start of the season. Great pickers, I guess. I don't know. Waited sheltered from the Mistral, the really persistent wind in that part of the country. Yep. And then when I met my friends, the Le Havre supporters, went to watch that game. 20-hour trip back on the minibus. And what I remember is everybody falling asleep, obviously in the middle of the night. And then we had to slam the brakes on the Peripherique in Paris. And it was like an avalanche. You know, the little glass beer bottles in France?
Yeah.
It was like an avalanche of those went flooding down the bottom of this metallic minibus, and the metal, you know, under the seats, holding the seats in place and all that. Yeah. And it was an absolute, I've never heard noise like it. And everybody woke up, you know, it was like I suppose it was like taking 100 bottles to the bottle bank at the same time. But, so Nîmes. And it was a really nice little town with an old, is it Roman arena? I guess it is, or an old arena in the middle. Fantastic little place down in the south of France, just as you come up from the coast. So,
you know what? I'm not interested in Le Show of the Week now. I've just had a brilliant story about a great football weekend.
Well, we'll hear what Phil has to say anyway. I mean, because there is some bits that have been missed out there. I mean, do you want to have a guess at the year, by the way?
Early 80s?
Yeah.
Late 70s? Right.
I mean, I absolutely love these old French shirts from that time. I love the massive... I love the old Adidas trefoil stuff and... Mm. You know, and the massive sponsors. I mean, like I've said before,
I think their rules must be different because they're very strict here.
But the old Bordeaux ones and the Saint-Étienne ones, they're brilliant. But anyway, this is what Phil has to say about this one. He says, here's your shirt of the week. It is the 1980-81 home shirt of French Ligue 2 side, Nîmes Olympique. And he chose it because he thinks it looks pretty darn smart. Nîmes Olympique play at the 18,482 capacity Stade Costière in the city of Nîmes in the south of France. They are nicknamed Le Crocodile because of when Henri Monnier set up the team in 1900, he chose the kit colours and fancied having a crocodile on the badge. They spent most of their time outside of the top flight in France. However, they have finished as runners-up on four occasions back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. In fact, they've been runners-up in the Coupe de France three times, runners-up in the Trophée de Champion, and runners-up in the Coupe de Drago also. There are a few links to the UK. Laurent Blanc spent a season with Nîmes in 92-93 and finished his career at Old Trafford in 2003. Eric Cantona spent half a season there directly before his move to Leeds in 92. And then rolling back the years, former Chelsea, QPR and Middlesbrough centre-forward Andy Wilson made over 350 appearances in England before moving to Nîmes in 1932. Yeah, we remember that one. Alou Cissé finished his playing career in Nîmes, having represented Birmingham and Portsmouth in England in the 2000s. He's trawled through the historical lists and other resources, but he couldn't find any links to the Albion. So he'll leave us with this nugget that the sponsor of the shirt, Kindy, is a brand of socks and pants made proudly in France.
Socks, pants and sponsored by pants and socks makers.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to be sponsored by pants and socks? That's what I say.
No, I can't even think of an equivalent. I mean, you can't even have M&S underwear, can you? Or
Sloggy? Someone must be sponsored by Sloggy somewhere.
Sloggy?
Yeah.
Adrian, what's Sloggy?
They make pants and socks.
Silly mate. All right.
For ladies of a certain vintage.
All right. Okay. Well, it's just the size of the I mean, I know you say you love it. I'm thinking of also RTL across the early Paris Saint-Germain shirts. Mm. They were enormous as well.
Yeah.
So they're all, I don't know if they've changed their rule since. I mean, like I'm saying they are very, very. The reason I got specifically found out about it was when I was doing Attila the Stockbroker's AFC Southwick shirts and couldn't. And the people who were making the shirt said, well, you can't have it more than this size. And I had to go back to Google and say, what is the size that you have? And there is a specific maximum size, but you know, in France or certainly back in the older days, like you say, it was a sponsor then attached to a shirt.
There was one team who has like different lots of different fruits. It was a fruit, I can't remember who it was though. So they didn't just have one fruit, they had pictures of different fruits and what have you. And you got Leon, of course, sponsored by their department number,
right?
That people might know about that one. But I won't say what it was. And the Le Havre team in those days, I think it was Unipri or something, just a massive U, probably the size of that kindy. So, but I think now it's probably small, as you say, but you can have a load of sponsors
Well, we had that shirt a couple of weeks ago with a giant mammoth on it, didn't we?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I was
the
on
the only
meant.
Time I think that the rules, but that's when they set the rules, was when Coventry had the huge Talbot T, which took over their entire shirt and shorts, I think. I mean, it looked okay, but I think after a while they said, you know, enough's enough. And although there has been, and historically from what we've seen from Phil's shirt site, and I'm sure that if we asked, he'd be able to tell us. There's one where the entire shirt is made up to look like a glass of beer. There's one which is, was it sprouts, was it, or cabbages?
Yeah, the Spanish one. So, it's Lugo, who David Lopez was playing for a while.
Yeah,
and
broccoli, wasn't it?
And there's broccoli. There's one which is an octopus all over it. It's because it's the local produce. Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely love all of those. Anyway, before we move on, our notice board.
Notice board. I only have to say this probably for one more week, and then so we've got two Renf games going on this year. The first one is actually next week. Friday the 29th of April at Croydon FC. That's Croydon Sports Arena, home to Croydon FC. The first leg, Crystal Palace versus Brighton. I've been given the squads, but without their ringers, so which is a little bit disappointing, not because I can't tell you who it is, but because I don't know myself. it is hoped that, yes, the chat from both sides, but we make no promises. Anyway, so that game's going on 7:45 up at Croydon FC. The return fixture is on Friday 27th of May. You can read all about this also, hopefully in the Argus very soon, he said, asking for a particular sports writer to see if he can pen a few words about it. put him in the spotlight, so nothing personal. So yes, the return match is 27th of May at Lansing's Sussex FA headquarters in Culver Road. Both are very accessible by public transport. Fiver to get in. And yeah, all money goes towards the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund. And talking of things that are fundraisers, as you well know, it's 25 years since we've left the Golden. In fact, it's 25 years this week, Adrian, since we left the Golden Ground. Our last ever game at home to Doncaster Rovers. And, well, this week, I think probably by the time you listen to this, they'd have had the Golden 25-year legends do. But we've got a Golden 25-year quiz night. So if you can remember whatever it is you can remember about the Albion since 1997, I won't make it too hard this time, because when it comes to doing the Renf quiz, I always do the Albion round, and that's the round that scores the lowest. So I won't make it too hard this time. So it's all you need is not just huge intelligence and memory from it. You don't need a huge amount of knowledge and intelligence. You just need a good memory. So don't drink too much if you can help it. that's the worst thing you could ever accuse a Brighton fan of doing, is not drinking enough. But yes, that's the 6th of May in Dick's Bar. If you want to take part, please do. You're more than welcome to come along. Just email me at goldston25quiz. That's goldston25quiz@gmail.com. And let me know that you're going to book a team. Please let me know in advance, because I have to let the caterers know. And it's £15 per person to take part. Pay on the night. It includes a free pie and pint. And all the money is split between Albion, the community, and the Ukraine Disaster Emergency Committee. So, yeah, please pop along. And let's have a good time going down memory lane.
No, absolutely. It'll be a good time, and as all your quizzes tend to be. OK, well, let's move on to this midweek's game then at Man City. Brian, I mean, obviously, we mentioned this earlier. I mean, we gave a good account of ourselves in the first half. But I mean, do you think we're masters of our own downfall a little bit on this one? I mean, there was a few... I mean, Graham was saying in the game, in his press conference afterwards, about the misplaced passes and things like that. You know, and two of their goals came from us giving the ball away.
I think it was just a really tall order to that third game in, 11 days or so. Just a massive, obviously without Bissouma as well, and Trossard can keep the ball. But it was just, I think it's just having to lift yourself again for that sort of challenge. And it was the biggest challenge, because you could feel that Brighton weren't as comfortable in possession and weren't as allowed to be as comfortable in possession as they were in those other two games. And obviously City are quite well known for their press and how they can make life difficult for other sides. So I think it was a combination of the two. Yeah, they can be better, but you've got to give City credit as well. It was a combination of both of them, and Brighton just spent a lot of time. There was no respite, really. There wasn't really 5 to 10 minutes when they were knocking the ball about, having a bit of pressure, or it was just constant on the back foot and being well organised, which they were generally. You know, they gave very good protection, but it was always like that, pretty much.
I mean, we mentioned earlier about Moises Caicedo, and that goal-saving tackle after what was a bit of a cock-up from Robert Sanchez with that ball straight to Mahrez in the penalty box. And Caicedo just came from nowhere to like put that tackle in. And, you know, any tackle in the box can be perceived as risky, I guess, particularly at the speed he came in. But it was such a great tackle.
Yeah, I noticed Lewis Dunk was back as well. He'd obviously seen a bit of potential danger. When you looked at Mahrez, once he'd taken the first touch and the groans around us, as soon as he didn't just hit it back into the net, it was like he took a touch and took his time. So Dunk was back in possession as well. There was a little gathering of players who could have blocked his way, but the Caicedo tackle was, yeah, pretty good. And he got another little foot in as well later on, not quite spectacular. He stayed on his feet on that occasion, but he could read danger. So, yeah, that was probably one of the highlight moments, wasn't it, that challenge?
It really was, because I mean, there wasn't really an awful lot going forwards. I mean, there was one Welbeck header, wasn't there? I mean, out of the two efforts on goal, but I mean, we know what City do. Their turnover of the ball once they've lost it. I mean, they try and do it within 8 seconds, don't they? So I think it's the mantra from Pep.
I don't even know if it's that many, but the one thing that I noticed sitting there, and I've had this before, is that they pass and pass and pass and you know, 25 yards, 30 yards out, spreading play one side to the other, and the crowd sit there quiet, and it's not exciting, and it's just possession, possession. And when the crowd, the City crowd, actually come to life is when the opposition commit players forward and then lose possession, sort of midway inside the opposition half, if City, or City's own half. If they pick the ball up, then suddenly people are on their feet and you can feel the buzz that isn't there when they're doing all their attacking, and, yeah, and that opens the play out. And obviously, City scored a winner against Brighton back in the Houghton days like that, when Brighton, for the first time, actually got players over the halfway line. And, and that was how the first goal came last night, Wednesday night, who can say it. And you're talking about streetwise. Are Brighton now streetwise? Don't think so on that first goal, because there's a couple of players who could have brought him down.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's advocating cheating, I guess, isn't it? But taking one for the team, it's part of it. And Conchito should have really got something on De Bruyne as he strode forward. I mean, watching the game last night, De Bruyne was just on one of those majestic nights, wasn't he?
Yeah, actually, going back to that, I can remember watching the reserve team game in the Gus Poyet era at Lancing, and he was standing on the grass bank on the far side, and there was a counter attack, and the opposition went through, and it was similar, and there was no foul or anything, and it ended up being a shot. And Poyet was shouting at, hey, whatever the player's name was, you're allowed to foul, you're allowed to foul. And I thought, no, you're not actually allowed to foul, but I know what you mean. Yeah. You should be fouling in that position.
Well, you're not allowed to foul. One of the points about it is Man City don't seem to have that such moral dilemma about them. I mean, to be honest, none of the top six do. If they think that they're going to get stuffed or turned over, they've got no problem. In fact, I always consider that it's more to the point that they take it in turns to offer up small niggly fouls in order that a referee isn't going to book them for persistent fouling.
And it is a tricky one, because Bissouma was suspended for trying to do that, wasn't he? It was unsuccessful. That was his 10th booking. So it was an awkward one to ask, which I didn't ask Potter about, actually. But, you know, on Monday, you're having to go and you're asking him, your player's getting too many yellow cards. And then on Wednesday, saying, don't you think you should have made a foul and got a yellow card? But, there was that. And there was, you know, they gave the ball away in the run up to the corner for the second goal. And there were some unlucky deflections on the first and second goal. But maybe that happens when you're having to do that much defending and being put under that much pressure for that long. Mm.
So, Brian, over the last few weeks, we've seen both teams in close quarters. They've taken it in turns to be at the top of the table. But it's City's to lose at the moment, isn't it? I mean, I don't know who's going to blink first.
No, I think so. I didn't actually see the Liverpool game, so I wasn't working at that time. But from what I've seen, City feel like the better side, but then Liverpool seem to be the greater force almost. So not sure. There was definite unease in that first half and at half time at the City Brighton game. So have they got a slip up in them more than Liverpool? I sort of wonder if they have, and that's a very strange thing to say, but I do wonder if they have. But it's one of those, remember a few years ago, and people say, oh, the twists and the turns and all the up and there weren't twists and turns at all. They both just kept winning, and there was only twists and turns because they didn't play at the same time.
I haven't got the exact stat, Brian, but I mean, over the last 3 years, their records are identical pretty much. There's two, I think it's 2 points to separate their records over the last three seasons.
Yeah,
that's remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and they are a level above, you know, Arsenal, Tottenham, who we saw Brighton play, but there you go. There's no shame in losing to them. Last time Brighton came back from Manchester after a defeat, it started as losing runs. So that's what they'll try to avoid. I mean, when they came back from United, they'd lost Lewis Dunk and they'd lost a fit Adam Webster. Hopefully now they're coming back from City, they've regained Adam Webster, who could feature in Sunday's game, and they've regained the real Lewis Dunk. So that could be the big difference.
I can't help looking back on that Manchester United game, just irrespective of the run that it put us on, I can't help thinking just what a poor result it was. Because, you know, Manchester United were not great. I think there seemed to be a little bit of stage fright with the Albion team itself. Now, it's a shame. The weird thing is that if we'd have played Manchester United this midweek, I think I'd have more fancied our chances than, say, those 6 weeks ago, because of that lift that the Liverpool and Spurs games Arsenal and Spurs games have given them. And with Manchester City, you can be flying as high as a kite, but there's nothing you can do about it if they feel like turning it on. But Manchester United don't seem to have that mojo at the moment. And, you know, we're playing them in, what, 2 or 3 weeks' time. And if we can keep our run going by playing well against Southampton and I think whoever it is we've got in between them and that
Wolves.
And Wolves is a place where, you know, we'd like to get a result. Mm. And all right, yeah, they're fishing for an eighth place, good for them. But if we can just for once pick up some points at home against the side that we should be picking up points against, then yeah, by the time we get to play Man United, I fancy our chances. I mean, the weird thing is that it's easy to say it, you know, in hindsight. But I think you called it, AD, by saying we're going to nose it up against Norwich and beat Arsenal.
Yeah.
But the issue about that is that I actually half fancied our chances against Spurs because, you know, the FA Cup game, notwithstanding the whole Harry Kane thing and him refereeing the game. And I did like our friend Vicky's tweet afterwards saying, well, to be fair, Spurs did have a couple of players missing, like Kane and Son, which I thought was brilliant. You know, it shows that the players can do it. And if they can just carry on with that level of consistency and confidence, Manchester United, at this moment in time, ought to be there for the taking.
Yeah. Well, that brings us on to this weekend then. We've got Southampton visits in the Amex. And the record has not been great at the Amex. I mean, and the press conference this week from Graham Potter, I mean, he was asked a lot of questions about the home form, wasn't he, Brian? He's muted. You're muted.
Enough.
There you go.
So I was just checking the email I've got from the club, actually. he does tend to be asked about that, and then he gets asked about lack of goals. So there are certain themes and what have you. I think you said 16 points. I think it's only 15 that they've got so far. It's going to be probably the lowest amount. But he's, I mean, he quite rightly, he's so many games that he said they're so close to having more points when you look at Palace at home, the missed penalty, when you look at Norwich at home, obviously. You forget how well they played against Arsenal and really should have won that against Leeds. So there are a few games which he reeled off the top of his head. Then when you think of the games that they have nicked points, if you like, away from home or got points late on. So I think what we need, it's a long time since we've had one of those home games which you can sort of think about and put a spring in your step as you're walking to work or walking the dog or whatever. It's a long, long time because, 8,000 saw the Man City game. But before that, what are you thinking of? 3-2 against Everton, maybe, early in Potter's?
Yeah, it's been a while, isn't it?
2-0 against Watford.
No, I'm thinking of the thing where you just have you see a result that's actually as alongside your expectations or slightly better. You're coming away puffing your imaginary cigar saying, that was good. I mean, actually, I'll give you an example of that. And we do have to rewind about 9 or 10 years here. Is that we were actually hitting a bad bit of form in the Championship. I think we've gone down to about 10th or 11th.
Mm. We're playing the game you're going to say. Yeah.
And turn them over 3-0. Mm. And we're really good. That was the day that...
Jay Forsacasti.
Sorry?
The JFC.
JFC and Ricky...
Lambert.
Got sent off.
Yeah.
His only red card. I know Greer got sent off in the last minute. But, you know, you're puffing on your cigar and you think, it was unexpected. But yeah, we haven't. You're right, Brian. We haven't had one of those games at the Amex for quite a while.
Well, I know. And like, I mean, Southampton. I mean, they may be coming in level in points with us. And as we record this, they are actually losing 2-0. At Burnley. So we'll
really. They turned Arsenal over, albeit with Fraser Forster in fine condition. Arsenal would hit the skids until they then turn Chelsea over. So if you're trying to find some rhyme and reason to this division, then just look at Liverpool and Manchester City, and then there's everyone else who can beat everyone else.
Yeah, and Southampton have got a particularly good record at the Amex, am I right in saying, in the Premier League era, some draws and some wins, and Andoni being sent off, and dodgy VAR penalty and what have you. So Brighton might owe them one at the Amex, certainly.
I agree, actually. We do get some moody penalties against us, against Southampton. And like I say, there was that one... Was that last season when it was the foul was clearly outside the box? Mm. There was the one with Lewis Dunk about 6-7 years ago that Tirico managed to get himself sent off by shooting his mouth off, but the foul was clearly outside. Well, the contact was clearly outside the box. It wasn't even a foul. Yeah, there's been some, you know, some very bent, moody decisions with penalties. It's but if it's 10 or 11 years since we think we've had a really good result against Southampton, then I think it's about time we had another one. Yeah.
I mean, we've been quite good there of late. Yeah. I mean, there was the win there last season, the late show with 10 men this season. So I mean, we just need to get some back to winning ways at home, because I mean, you mentioned earlier, it's that feel good factor coming out of there, with that winning feeling. It doesn't happen enough, and the way not everyone can go to the away games. Not everyone has seen these magnificent performances that we've put on the road.
Well, and 10%.
It would be just nice to have 30,000 people going home, having seen us do what we do. I mean, the performances have been there. But,
that's the point, Aidy. That's the point. The performances have, for the midfield performances, have been good. And again, it was mentioned, Norwich, Leeds, probably a few other games where we cut through the opposition midfield like a hot knife through butter.
Mm.
And then, if you excuse me mixing my food references here, can't shoot for toffee. You know, it's we've
made a belange of us.
It's a phrase you used last year, the number of points we left out on the pitch. We've done it again this year, but actually mostly at home, because as you say, certainly in London, we've gone on a sort of a 90th minute rampage.
Step one is a goal at the Amex.
Yes.
The first time since Adam Webster against Chelsea. It was this year, wasn't 18th, it?
But, 18th of January, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be the first. If that could be the first goal of the game, even better, because that would be the first time since Boxing Day to go ahead.
Is Webster good to start? Did he start last night?
No, he didn't.
No, he played half an hour. He can play more than half an hour, we think, on Sunday. Whether that's enough to start, I don't
doubt it.
I think it's outside chance, but does he do that, or does he like what he's got with Veltman, Dunk and Kukurea? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think if he's only fit to play half an hour, then you don't start, because with the number of substitutes that we have these days, the Brian Clough adage has gone out the window. If you're fit enough to be on the bench, you're fit enough to play 90 minutes. So,
was he a physiotherapist, was he?
Oh, Brian Clough. Yes, he was. Yeah. And he used to do most of his video with a squash racket, I understand. But
and he was an accountant and a bookmaker. And let's not go down that road. Yeah.
He made a lovely candle.
decision today, Potter said there is a chance we will see how he goes over the next few days. That was when asked whether he could have a bigger role than half an hour. But you think a bigger role than half an hour means a start. So,
and if it's a start, then it's got to be 70 minutes. You know, he's got to be good for 70 minutes minimum.
Which would be nice, because that's what he's the one who gets Brighton playing. On top of the defending that he might do, which I think the defending's been good, and Dunk is absolutely back at his best, as is Veltman actually. But Webster has that, getting them playing as well. I mean, he did throw him on, not, it wasn't just half an hour. How much is half an hour against a Man City team in full cry at the Etihad? How much is that worth in real terms? Maybe that's worth
90 minutes on his own right.
We'll see.
Yeah. He's not far off. Well, I guess we'll find out on Sunday how we get on. Hopefully, we will see a goal fest for the Albion. But in the meantime, you've been listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Bye.
Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look to us. WrestleMania has bitten the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing except for the rain and the crunch of thing. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is going thin. Engines stop running, but I have no fear, cause London is drowning. I live by the river, to the imitation zone. Forget it, brother, you can go in alone. London calling to the zombies of death. Quit holding out and draw another breath. London calling, and I don't wanna shout, but while we were talking, I saw you nodding out. London calling, see we ain't got no hide, except for that one with the yellowy eyes. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Engines stop running, the wheat is going thin. A nuclear error, but I have no fear, cause London is drowning. Some of it was true. London calling at the top of the